Oops, I'll say that again. This song is usually sung on the disappearance days of great acharyas. It is by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, who spent most of his life lamenting. Shochati iti shudra, one who laments is a shudra, but this is a different kind of lamentation. This is transcendental lamentation. So, in his youth, he ran away to Vrindavan, and there most of the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had already passed away. But Lokanath Goswami must have been very old, because he was the first one sent to Vrindavan by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was still alive then. So Narottam Das became his only disciple. And he studied along with Srinivas, who also had a great pastimes of separation, just missing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then Gadadhar Pandit. So he was trained by Jiva Goswami and, of course, Shamananda, the three Prabhus, Narottam Thakur, Shamananda Pandit, and Srinivas Prabhu. These are the honorary titles given to them. So he spent his whole life lamenting that he could not attain the association of these great devotees. And this song captures expresses the lamentation in which he spent his whole life. Of course, there are different moods in bhakti also. There's also happy songs of Narottam Das. They're not all sad. What is that? Shadai Suru. Narottam Das Koi Nitta Lila Shukamoy Shadai Svaruk Moramane is another song he sings about the Vrindavan, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. And he says that these pastimes are all full of happiness. May they always be manifest in my heart. So anyway, this song. He's referring to Srinivas Acharya. Yeah, Srinivas Acharya. That's the common title given to him. They're all called Prabhu, all three of them. Srinivas Acharya, first of all, he says, that Prabhu, that master, that Acharya, or Thakur is a name given. Actually, it's a name for God. And Prabhu is also means God, but it's given to great devotees also. So, he who brought the treasure of pure love of Krishna, who was had much, very great mercy, such a master, where has he gone, the Srinivas Acharya? And then he goes on, where are my Swarup Damodar, Rup Goswami, Sanatan Goswami? Where is Raghunath Das, who is the purifier of the fallen? Where are my Bhatta Juga? That means Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta. Where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? All at once, they've all gone with Gaura. Gaura is a nickname, you can say, for Gaura. Gaura and Gaura is a nickname for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nataraj, the king of dances. So I will smash my head against rock, Narottam Das says, and enter into fire, not getting the where will I go to get Gauranga, who is the Gauranga, who is the treasure of all transcendental qualities. not getting the association of those associates with whom Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed pastimes, Narottam Das weeps. That's how we should feel. We don't. Narottam Das says he will break his head against the rock, and our heart is like rock, just feelingless, hearts cold. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarne Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Iti Namine Shri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayataya Krivabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Madhuryojvala Premadha Shri Rupa Anuga Bhaktita Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtiye Dinatarne Rupa Anuga Virudha Pasidhanta Dvanta Harane Vancha kalpataruphas chakripas indhubhya vichapati dhanapavaribhyo Vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atapati Amalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajavatam Sahagana Rakhunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Shakadam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. And today is the disappearance day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the anniversary of his departure from this world that was 76 years ago on the 1st of January. So on we celebrate such days according to the lunar cum solar calendar, generally called the lunar calendar. Specifically, we follow Gaurabda or Chaitanyabda, the year according to the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But that this year coincides with the date of the Gregorian calendar. It means he disappeared on the 1st of January. 1937. Actually, according to the because he left this world in the hours just before dawn, it actually counts as the day before, according to the Gaurabda, because the day according to Vedic reckoning begins at sunrise, just at sunrise, whereas in the Western system, it begins in the middle of the night for some reason known better to Pope Gregory or whoever made this system. It's probably going on before him. It's called the Gregorian calendar after some Pope. Cause a lot of problems, the Popes in the history of the world. Anyway, that isn't the subject today. So today we should discuss. What should we discuss? Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. That's the name of a book, or came out as three books because it became too big to print in one book. Set, which I was engaged in the service of compiling, the translation of Vaibhava is glory, grandeur, opulence, so we should discuss about this. His Vaibhava is composed of Varni and Vilasa. These are the two main components or divisions. His words, what he says, and his activities. So we are to consider this. He's very mercifully appeared in this world and very mercifully disappeared from it also, because it's all amrita, varni vilas amrita. It's all nectar. So he gives us the opportunity to think of him, and naturally by thinking about him, our consciousness rises above our day-to-day petty affairs, the little things that we're thinking about and talking about and living with, and lifts us. Just by thinking about him, we're lifted up to his platform. Although that is his vaibhav, one of the aspects of his vaibhav, that he came to this world, though he had nothing intrinsically to do with it, he came to this world and he also got involved in all these, apparently involved in all the pettiness of it. Just like we may be discussing about some devotee, they're not doing so well in devotional life, or it's just some what seems like very small affairs, very, very much concerned with this world. So he did also. He kept the accounts of the Jogapit, and he would have to talk to the pujaris there to try to convince them to stay. No one wanted to stay. I'm talking about this was before the Chaitanya Mart was established, and the Jogapit temple in Mayapur was one small building in rice fields, hardly accessible, and no one wanted to stay. He would hire pujaris, and they would run away. They would like to run away, one after the other. So, because Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur instituted the system that, which was the standard system, that only persons born in Brahmana families should worship the deity. So it's difficult to get. Later he had disciples, and some from Brahmin families also came to join him. So up to now, even though Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't make any distinction. That if someone came from a Brahmin family, he didn't treat them as if there was... If someone came to join him, he wouldn't treat them as anything different from anyone else from any other family. That Brahmin thread they'd have to get rid of that, and he would give them a Brahmin thread, and that was the sign of real Brahminism. Not that as Brahminism as a facet of a subordinate facet to Vaishnavism. But even today at the Jogpit, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur instituted that, those who will worship the deity should be born in a Brahmin family, although it has, in the present age, especially in Bengal, it has very little meaning. Especially in Bengal. I mean, here in South India, you do find Brahmins who are still maintaining their Brahminical culture to quite some extent, but in Bengal, I can't think of any. Staying or really following. the present and previous chief ministers of Bengal are from Brahmin families. most of the Brahmins, they're all communists in Bengal. at least the present one's not a communist. It's even being a renegade of the Congress Party is better than being a communist. Anyway, we shouldn't discuss politics here. So, where to begin? You have to begin somewhere. Usually, in discussing such personalities, we discuss in a chronological way, because that's the way we think. In this world, we see, we think in terms of chronological time, although that's meaningful only to us. In spiritual existence, there are no chronometers. There's no measurement of time. There's no need for such a thing. And everything is eternal. Krishna is born. He grows up. He performs so many pastimes. He leaves. The Vrajavasis are plunged into bliss. He comes back again, and then they forget that he ever left, and it all goes on and on eternally. But in this world, we have a conception of time. Interestingly, Indians have been criticized by the West in as many ways as Western people can imagine, and they're still working on trying to find some more. One of their criticisms is that Indians are not history conscious. They don't keep proper histories. Actually, there are historical records also, but traditionally Indians have not been very history conscious. Probably for this reason, that within Indian understanding, time is so vast. There are cycles of time, and 1,000 Sahasra Yoga Paryanta Mahayat Brahmano Viduhu. The 1,000 ages makes one day of Brahma, and Brahma, his whole life, which is 100 years of such days, is just within one breathing of Mahavishnu. So, with the consideration that time is going on in cycles, and there's nothing really new, everything's just going on as it did previously, and that our existence, even if you take the great history of China, or in China people are very history conscious, so we've heard, or the great history of Britain, or the great history of the United States of America, all less than 350 years of it. It's all just in time. If Brahma coughs already, in the time it takes him to sneeze, already the whole history of China got included within that. So that's one reason why, or two reasons why Indians are not so much history conscious. They're more concerned with the essence rather than with this ephemeral history of dynasties, Ming Dynasty and all this in China. They have this. Here in Tamil Nadu, there are the Cholas, the Pandyas, and the, what's the other one?
Jesus.
Chera. So these are three great dynasties in recent times. Yeah. So people, we usually begin, but with the birth. One thing I was saying, that they come down among our petty concerns, and it's a relief to think of them when we see that our very small affairs, that last night, I'm concerned with very small affairs of very small living entities, namely bed bugs. So these are my concerns. I'm bed bug conscious. So to think of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lifts us up to his level of consciousness, and then on a broader scale, my concern is how the Krishna consciousness movement, which is meant for bringing the highest knowledge, activity, experience, and love, that's karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti, to the lowest people of Kali Yuga, how it tends to get, despite the appearance of great devotees, it tends to get very quickly taken over by people of a lower level of consciousness. So we see that's a repeated pattern. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he preached so vigorously. One reason, we may ask, why is he so heavy? He's the lion guru in the Acharya Kesari. He's described in Gaurya Math annals as Acharya Kesari, which got translated in English as lion guru and then got translated back as Singha Guru. So, but at least I've never seen him in the writings of the Gaurya Math described as Singha Guru. It's Acharya Kesari, which means the same thing. Kesari means a lion. So he was so lion-like. Why he did that? Well, one reason we can, from our very tiny perspective, we can understand he did so, was to alleviate the distress of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to fulfill the mission of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and alleviate his distress. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I don't know if I can find it here in all these books. If I had my laptop, I would. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know so well. He was lamenting before his passing away. That we preach so strong, we preach so widely and so nicely, and so many people took it up, Krishna consciousness, pure Krishna consciousness. But then the rogues, the Prakritas, the Hajiyas, and all these bogus people came, and they took advantage of all this to propagate their bogus doctrines. The newfound enthusiasm for Vaishnavism was appropriated by these people. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was lamenting. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came forward. You got it? Very good. This I can read this. I'll read from had Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati not preached and acted as he did, had he not overridden rather than adjusted to certain social requirements, had he not clearly delineated the difference the difference between Shuddha Bhakti and both Mishra and Vidha Bhakti. Yeah, you can know what these terms are. Shuddha Bhakti means without any personal desire. Mishra Bhakti means mixed with personal desire. And Vidha Bhakti is similar to Mishra Bhakti, but it's worse. It's a misrepresentation of Bhakti. If he had not done this, then the gains made by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for pure Vaishnavism would have been wholly commandeered by the upper sampradayas. Even in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's presence, various camps of pseudo-Vaishnavas had taken advantage of his lenience and repopularizing of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Indeed, his retirement from public life was impelled by the resurgence of the upper sampradayas, as he himself had revealed. It's quite a long quotation. Today we are sitting in a bhajan kutya in Sri Purushottam Kshetra. That's the bhakti kuti, which has been now taken over and rebuilt by ISKCON, and famously in Puri among the Gauriya groups converted into a restaurant. They're not happy about that, and rightly so. Why have we abandoned the capital of scholarship, the crowded and busy Calcutta, to escape to this far-off place? Many days ago, when we had just started the publication of Sajjana Toshani, our heart was enlivened with hope. The more an unadulterated Vaishnav Dharma is promoted throughout the world, the more benefit its people would get. We took up our work with such honest intentions. Many learned Goswamis. Oh, that should be capital. Make a note. Many learned Goswamis and Babaji started coming from all different parts of Bengal to offer help. Several learned impersonalists joined us and, captivated by the beauty of Shuddha Bhakti, started manifesting pure Vaishnava behavior. This was the influence of Bhakti Narottam. There's a great work to be done in the service of Vaishnava Dharma, is to make a similar study. Actually, this is only an overview, this Bhaktistan Viva, but a similar study of Bhaktivinod Thakur should be made also. We do have material on him, not so much. Research, it's a big job. Should be done. And then that should be brought out. How Saraswati Krishna Priya, Krishna Bhakti Tar here, Shai Shai Binode Bhaibhav, that how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is the decoration, the glorification of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not something different as certain rascals maintain. So, the effect of his preaching, the caste Goswamis, Babaji's, who are there, Vaishnavas, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but they weren't getting the path, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave it to them. Learned people, including impersonalists, they came and took up bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. On hearing the charming instructions on Vaishnav Dharma, even mundanas were enchanted by Shuddha Bhakti. Those fond of music and song who were previously averse to God now submerged themselves wholeheartedly in the ways of Shuddha Hari Kirtan, continuously rejoicing at their good fortune. In towns and villages, devotional societies were established one after another. It was an amazing effect Bhaktivinoda Thakur had from his preaching. In this way, Shuddha Vaishnav Dharma manifested its glories in the hearts of almost every person in Bengal, astounding and delighting all by its natural splendor and sweetness. Seeing such changes beyond our boldest expectations in the life of Bengal, our enthusiasm in preaching Shuddha Bhakti increased day by day. Unfortunately, at this very point, the times and courses of events suddenly altered. All those false religions that had hidden themselves hither and thither from the powerful rays of Vaishnav Dharma, just as glowworms hide from the rays of the suns, suddenly started crawling out from their hiding places, taking on new forms. Mayavad, the dharma of the asuras that for the time being had sunk into the abyss of forgetfulness, emerged once again in people's conversations and discussions. This time camouflaged by the words of Smriti and having taken refuge on the boat of Brahmana scholars' logic. Following them, Mayavada's accomplices, the yogis, appeared both in this country and abroad, causing confusion in the entire religious domain. From the other side, sensualists began causing harm to the world by taking the form of varied pseudo-religious groups such as Sahajiyas, Bowels, and the like. A few worms swarming in the stool of Pratishtha displayed the utmost effrontery by posing before the ignorant public as avatars of Bhagavan. Others took attractive Vaishnava names, decorated themselves with Acharya titles, and started promoting non-Vaishnava ideas in the guise of Vaishnava Dharma. Our hearts shattered on seeing the drastic turn of events. While we were looking for the cause of what was happening, the following words of Srila Prabodha Ananda Saraswati Pad suddenly unfolded in our heart. Kala kalir balina indriya vairi varga shri bhakti marga iha kantaka koti rudha ha ha kvayami vikala kimaham karomi chaitanya chandra yadi nadya kripang karoshi. It is Kali Yuga, and our enemies, the senses, are powerful. In this world, the path of bhakti is spiked with millions of thorny obstacles. O Chaitanya Chandra, if you do not bestow your mercy on me today, then, being confused, where will I go and what will I do? Tearfully chanting these words, we reached the place of the Lord's appearance, Sri Mayapur, yet even there our sorrow did not subside. Having forsaken our homeland in search of the Lord, we finally came to Sri Kshetra, Puri, Jagannath Puri, the place of his disappearance. Here we rolled in despair on the golden sands, and then the Lord revealed the following message in our heart. O Sajjanatosharni, may thou be in peace. In this samsara, the nature that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he himself, is non-different from Sajjanatosharni. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu addressed him as Sajjanatosharni, which means that which gives satisfaction. It's actually she who, it's a feminine name, she who gives satisfaction to the devotee. Sajjan means devotee. It's an honest person, a good person. May thou be in peace. In this samsara, the nature acquired by the jivas according to their karma in unlimited rebirths pushes them to assume more karma again and again. As long as they are not fully freed from non-devotional desires, whatever good instruction you give them will bounce off their ears and not penetrate their heart. Thus, no matter how well you preach bhakti dharma, however much you discuss bhakti katha, due to their karma, you will not be able to give them anything substantial. Hence, nothing will come of all your speeches and discourses. Now hear my command. Stay in the place where after burying my beloved Haridas, I performed loud kirtan. Reside here and pray for the welfare of the burdened souls by constantly chanting the glories of Sri Nama. Hearing these glories will bring them the sukriti that will give them confidence in the power of the name. This in turn will bless them with faith in Shuddha Bhakti, birth after birth. In obedience to the order of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the Lord of our heart, here we set up a bhajan kutir, where the heaving waves wash onto the seashore. So why did I read all that when it's all Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Well, in this regard we can cite the one anecdote which Srila Prabhupada sometimes he told. There was a book called Shah Jahan, and the whole story was about Aurangzeb. At the beginning, Aurangzeb kills his three brothers and imprisons his father, Shah Jahan. And then the whole book is about this Aurangzeb. And then someone, Srila Prabhupada told this story that why did you call it Shah Jahan when the whole book's about Aurangzeb? No, the book's about Shah Jahan because he's locked up thinking about all this. He's unhappily meditating on this the activities of his son. So in the same way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his whole lila, his everything about him is Bhakti Vinod. Everything he did was on the order of Bhakti Vinod. Bhakti Vinod Thakur told him to serve and preach Gaura Naam, Gaura Dham and Gaura Kam, the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the holy place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Mayapur Dham, and the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Priti Viti Ache Jato Nagaradi Gram Sabhatta Pracha Hoibe Maranam, that his name, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name, will be preached all over the world. There's also his internal desire, which is in the mood of Radha to attain Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he is that. He is Nayanmani. He is the personification of Krishna's looking, or Radha's seeing Krishna. So these are all very esoteric matters. So he was serving all these, Gaura Naam, Gaura Dham, Gaura Kam. And really, if you see his whole activity, that's what he did. He preached Bhakti Siddhanta. He is Bhakti Siddhanta. He preached this for fulfilling Gaura, preaching Gaura Naam, Gaura Dham, and fulfilling Gaura Kama. But that was all within the context of Bhaktivinoda Upadesha. All within the context of the instructions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, one of the instructions of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is Parampara Jano Bhalo Mata. You should know well, very well, what is parampara. So this is just in four words. It's very important, vital instruction. We should know very well what is parampara, what is the principle of parampara, what are the teachings of our parampara, who are the acharyas, and what role have they played within this prapancha, this material world, what role they have played in different times in revealing the message of the parampara and carrying it forward. In is every acharya, he adds something to the garland around Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They add some more flowers in the forms of their teachings and activities, and the jivas who they bring to Krishna. So we should know very well. It's a great subject. What is our what is the Gauriya parampara? What are the teachings? The teachings are Bhakti Siddhanta. Those are the teachings. Teachings are Bhakti Vinod. Those are the teachings. So the happiness of bhakti. These are all non-different. There's no Bhakti Vinod without Bhakti Siddhanta. There's no Bhakti Siddhanta without Bhakti Vinod. Bhakti Vedanta again is Bhakti Siddhanta again, but that's emphasizing that this is Bhakti Vedanta, that emphasizes that Vedanta is not the property of the impersonalists, and that bhakti is not some empty sentiment. So Bhaktivinod and Bhaktisiddhanta, they're inseparable. One does not exist without the other. So how Gauriya Parampara here in this land where we live, where we are presently situated, the Ramanuja Parampara has been very prominent. Although practically in a short time, the small efforts of our preachers here, practically the ISKCON is better known than the Ramanuja Sampradaya here. But that's, we don't want to say that in a competitive way, because we worship the lotus feet of Sri Ramanuja and all his followers. But unfortunately, their teachings and activities have become eclipsed by the agents of Kali. And even those who are supposed to be the followers of Ramanuja, many of them, they don't know what are the teachings of Ramanuja. Many of them, they've been worshipping Sai Baba and all this, and very, very bad situation. After so many generations, such an honorable, respectable parampara. So, our parampara, that also we have to know, to properly know what is Gauriya Parampara, we have to know also what are all the other paramparas. We should know then what is Shankara Parampara, Ramanuja, Madhva. These three generally these three are considered the Vedanta, exegetes of the Vedanta, these three. And the Vallabh Parampara is also important. Still, Nimbaka hardly. Still there's something. But Vallabh Sampradaya, not here, but in Vallabh Sampradaya in Gujarat, Rajasthan, Vrindavan area. They're more in the Govardhan area, not much in Vrindavan itself. Throughout the Rajamandal, Gokul, they have like this. So we should know in how our sampradaya, how is the fulfillment of all the in teachings, in practice, in bhakti, how the Gauriya Parampara is the fulfillment of all that. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had a very great vision to establish all of this. His vast mind, which is on every aspect of Vaishnavism, his mind was constantly thinking how to establish all these in the world. So many projects and ideas he had. Now our own Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he appears to be different again. Just yesterday I was reading, Srila Prabhupada said about Bhakti Godhead magazine, he said, we don't want any complex philosophy, just keep it very simple, that's all. Which is quite different to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, whose philosophical presentation is sometimes thought to be complex. It's not really complex, it's actually very clear. But because our brains are not clear, we tend to think in very complex ways. So he wrote in a manner which seems to be complex, but then linguistically you could say it's complex, but it's like that because if you enter into it, then you can understand. He's writing in such a way that it cannot be misconstrued. Everything's completely clear. Whereas if you write in a more vague manner, it may be more, it's going to be misinterpreted. So his works are not misinterpreted. Hardly anyone reads him nowadays. Most of his writings are almost all in Bengali. His own style of Bengali. Hardly anyone reads. There's hardly anyone to appreciate. The day will come when people will study. It's already started. I mean, there are a few people from the Western world who're studying this. But even among, in the Gaudiya Math, you'll hardly find, in all its different branches, you'll hardly find anyone who reads his works. If they read anything, mostly they don't read anything. Hardly. Mostly they read Prabhupada's books, our own Prabhupada, because they're understandable. His Bhaktisiddhanta's writings, then it's a mental effort to understand them. You have to really, it requires a high level of education to even begin to read them. So most people are lazy. Intellectually also. So, Srila Prabhupada said to make everything simple. Why? Because who's going to understand all these things? Once, I believe it was in Tirupati, as far as I remember, one scholar came to him and said, I've studied, he listed all the things he studied, and said, I'd like to teach your disciples this. And Prabhupada said, yeah, there's no point, because they won't follow it all. For a start, you won't find anyone who's interested. And another thing, they won't follow it all. We're going to talk about so many things. There's some of that is in Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita commentary, which is translated from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, in which, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's mentioned there how there's a discussion of Vivartavad and Pratibimbavad and all these different things, Shakti Parinamvad and all these things. So there's just some discussion of that. It's the most difficult part in all of Prabhupada's books, probably. But mostly people, they can't follow all of this, and that's maybe one reason why, one of the reasons why Hinduism is such a mess nowadays. Yesterday I was looking for something. I was trying to find the source of the Agyanitimirandhasya verse on the internet, because it's clearly it's not a specifically Vaishnava verse. It's this. So I was trying to look for that. So I saw the Agyanitimirandhasya meaning came up. So I looked, and there's a site, Spiritual India. And the Spiritual India site is the adorned with pictures of Shirdi Sai Baba. Spiritual India. And then they had all these verses, Guru Stotram, but I don't know, from Shivananda, Divine Life Ashram Society. I don't know whether it doesn't say what the source of it. People don't even think of such things nowadays. Just even to have a Guru Stotram, something in Sanskrit, is something highly advanced. So one reason why that Hinduism has become such a mess, and there's all this, this Sai Baba, how could it become so popular? Well, one reason is because there's no study of philosophy, hardly. I mean, there are a few. I mean, still as a matter of upholding their tradition that Shringeri, the Shankara, who's going to be Shankaracharya, they have to study all their books, old books, and the up to now the sannyasis in the Madhva Sampradaya, they're trained in Nyaya Sudha, very complex philosophical discussion, logical discussion, logic. Nyaya means logic. It's or also means justice, law. So, but it's studied just as a, practically as a ritual. Whereas Srila Prabhupada, one of his great gifts was that he took the essence of this philosophy and applied it in our lives. The Nyaya Sudha at the time, who wrote that? Was it Jayatirtha? Huh? Vijayadvajatirtha. So at that time that was relevant, but nowadays who can understand all these things? So Srila Prabhupada, he applied it practically. He made Srila Prabhupada spoke. It wasn't that when Srila Prabhupada said make it simple, he didn't say that just have cartoons or something like this. Srila Prabhupada spoke philosophy literally day and night, but he made it simple. He presented it in a simple way and in a relevant way to people of the present time. So in this way he brought bhakti, what was bhakti siddhanta and bhakti vinod, what was required for people at this time. Oh, so I'm talking about bhakti siddhanta, Saraswati, but in a broad way. I'm talking about bhakti siddhanta, you could say, in a broad way. Because if we have to discuss him, generally on these days people discuss pastimes, they like to hear stories. But he is bhakti siddhanta. He didn't come to make some drama that people can make some film of later or something. They can make a film, that's all right, but it wasn't that he was just playing some games so that people can, oh, Guru Dev did this, Guru Dev did that. But he was living Bhakti Siddhanta, speaking it and living it at every moment, and he wanted to convey that to others. So we should discuss better than discussing his pastimes, which are not different from his teachings, but if we discuss his teachings that would be more relevant. So drigdrishyavichar, they said that is the essence of all that I have to speak. This drigdrishyavichar, it's there's a the Drigdrishya Vichara means consideration of the seer and the seen. So this Drigdrishya Vichara is not a term that he invented. This is going on in for want of a better term, Indian philosophy for generations together. I didn't make that point. In the next edition, I'll do that. Shankara spoke of Drigdrishya Vichara even before that. You could say it's a standard topic in Indian philosophical discourse. According to Shankara, now you have to laugh because it's so stupid. Yeah, the seer and the seen, they all become one. But in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's dialectic, they are eternally different, and although we think of ourselves, I will see God, but rather we should act in such a way, we should understand that we are seen by Him. We are relative, He is absolute. We depend on His existence. not that he depends on our existence. So he said, this is the essence of all my teachings. And it's quoted by a reliable source, which I didn't write in the book, and I also made a note that I didn't write in the book, that he said that who except Vasudev has understood this, Ananta Vasudev, not put in because of Ananta Vasudev's later history, which is quite extraordinary. What's that? Yeah, well, I didn't write that in the text, but why I didn't write it in the text is in a footnote. Quite extraordinary and enigmatic. Great personality, no doubt. All these. One of his vaibhavs, which is one section of the book of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, is his followers. Really quite amazing. The personalities he gathered around himself and what he gave to them and how he developed them. Now, our own Srila Prabhupada, he would sometimes criticize them. But my understanding of this is that Srila Prabhupada's criticizing them, then we can understand what is Srila Prabhupada's position. That he's criticizing them for not preaching as vigorously as he did. But they're all very great personalities. We shouldn't think, well, Prabhupada's criticizing them, therefore they're all rubbish and useless. But rather, how bold is Prabhupada to criticize them as being such such great personalities? Yeah. So is it true what Prabhupada said in criticism? Yeah, from one perspective it's true. From another perspective, we can hear such things and not think that oh, they're all useless. In one sense it's true. I mean, Radha also criticizes Krishna. Is it true? Well, in one sense it's true. If you're on the level of Radha, you can do that. We can't say that what she's saying is not true, but it's probably best not for us to try to repeat that. So I hope the time can come when we can properly appreciate the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's difficult to do so because of institutional political considerations which continue. Oh, and that's one point again, I'm going here and there. This is what's called this so-called lecture is going on according to, what's that called? Manduka Gati Nyai. The way a frog jumps here and there with no particular, it often doesn't appear to have any particular, where's it going? It'll jump, a big jump this way and then a short jump another way and like this. So that's one point I wanted to make, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was lamenting. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also said that I'm leaving this world, or it was said about him that he left this world. Srila Prabhupada said about him that he left early, being disappointed with his neophyte disciples. He himself said, that I would stay in this world for 10 years more, but now I'm going early. He passed away at a fairly young age, you could say. If not that we see, not that his body is material. Srila Prabhupada, of course, the circumstances in which he departed are the subject of some controversy, which will probably go on. But it's generally accepted that he left the world not in disgust at his disciples, But a similar situation has arisen. Now this is getting more controversial. That just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur had preached so vigorously and brought in pure devotion, but then it got taken over. The pure devotion got restated or appropriated by mundane people in the guise of Vaishnavas. So we see that increasingly, we find ourselves in a similar situation. That preaching pure devotion, but it's getting mixed up with or subordinated to mundane welfare work, impersonalism, self-promotion, self-interest. All these things are going on. The two main functions of ISKCON are to feed hungry people and to help people get free from the anxiety of modern life. It's right there on a website run by ISKCON Pune. So the same, it seems like a pattern that great acharyas come and then their followers have a better idea. I know all this pure devotion, it's too much, people can't appreciate it, so for the sake of preaching, let's feed the hungry, and then people will appreciate it, and then we can speak to them about, and if they appreciate us, that's good, and then we can speak to them about pure devotion. The idea becomes like that, but then the feeding the poor goes on, and the pure devotion gets left somewhere behind. We forgot about it. We got so busy feeding the poor and having photos with prominent people and we're so careful to make sure that everything we say they like it, that we don't say anything about pure devotion. They don't like it, and this is the problem. And then preaching becomes collecting. We find that in much of ISKCON India today, someone's called a preacher, it means they go out and bring money. It's called preaching. And the other idea of preaching is that you have a photo taken with some prominent meat eater, or like Dalai Lama or someone like that. And that's called preaching. Oh, and interfaith, of course. You meet with various denominations and you discuss with each other how nice everyone is, and that's it. So these things are going on. Actually, I was hopeful that by publication of this book, Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, in which the message of pure devotion is so robustly presented, because if we're going to write about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then it has to be strong. And people like to read different books, so I thought they'll read this book. You know, they already read Prabhupada's books. That was a long time ago. We already read that. So we're reading all different books, so they might get it. It's everything's so clear from this book that how compromise and great translation going on there. What's the word? But if you say it in, yeah, they won't understand that in Bengali. You may more like to understand compromise. Maybe they don't understand Hindi also. What's the Bengali word? I can't think of it just now. Ah. So I was thinking that this might jerk our movement into shape, because it's mostly the leaders will read it, or people, you know, who've read Prabhupada's books. And this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav can be, I would think it can be appreciated by devotees who've read Prabhupada's books thoroughly, studied them thoroughly, not just by anybody. So I was hoping it might have some effect, but no effect. No sign of any effect. Our movement is becoming compromised more and more and more in so many ways, in practically every way. So anyway, at least here and in a few places we can try to keep the Bhakti Siddhanta alive. One very prominent feature of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is his gravity and profoundness. Srila Prabhupada taught in a very different way, or conducted his mission in a different way. Not that Srila Prabhupada wasn't grave, but I often give, this is my perspective, or that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, as Srila Prabhupada said, a Vaikuntha man. He was very clearly from the spiritual world, and his whole way of teaching was come up. He spoke down to others, come up. Now Srila Prabhupada, he was also very clearly from the spiritual world, but, and he did, he spoke as an acharya, no doubt. But he would also be with his disciples and with others as if he was one of them. Definitely when he was speaking from the Vyasa-san, he would speak as an acharya. He would take the role of a teacher. Not just a teacher, but an absolute authority. That is how an acharya teaches. But Srila Prabhupada would also behave sometimes in a very ordinary, not mundane, but in a friendly way with his disciples, and joke with them. And so my perspective is this, that Prabhupada, it's like he took our hands and said, come with me, it's easy. Whereas Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was, come up, come up. So a different approach. So very grave, very profound. So we should remember that, not make everything into it. It's very easy to make everything light and cheap, but bhakti is not cheap. The dignity, we should maintain the dignity of Vaishnavism, which even non-devotees, they can sense if the lack of dignity sometimes. Australian journalist, he'd visited Mayapur and Navadvip, and he thought that Mayapur, ISKCON, he thought it was very commercial compared to Navadvip. Isn't that ironic? The origin, the temple of Dhameshwar Mahaprabhu, which is maintained by, in Navadvip, which is maintained by an upper sampradaya, what we call an upper sampradaya. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur established Mayapur as the actual birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, saying that in Navadvip they're all commercial because you have to pay to go in the temple and they're just interested in money. But now a reporter came from the Sydney Herald or something like this, and he says, that's his observation, that Mayapur is very commercial, whereas the temple over in Navadvip, it's just quiet and calm. So we have to be careful. And Mayapur also, at the Chaitanya Mart, they call the ISKCON temple in Mayapur the tourist mandir. Of course, they'll always criticize everything we do, and no, they're also happy. They're getting so many more visitors because of ISKCON. Otherwise, when I first went to Mayapur in 1976, it was empty practically. There's hardly anyone coming to the Gauriya Math. On Gaurpurnima, people would come, but so many people come throughout the year now because of ISKCON. But actually, Prabhupada, he said to develop the Varnashram city, not just guest houses. So that's a fact. And you see chow mein, pizza, and all this kind of thing. And it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. So, yeah, how we should maintain the spirit and gravity and purity of what our acharyas have given us. Not make it cheap. Mantra rock dance and all this kind of thing. Maintain the dignity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Cartoon Krishna. Hare Krishna. Here's a quote. Just there's so much this. How many pages total? More than 1500? No, not so many. 600. Three books? No, this one book is 500. So it's about 1600 pages total. It's very rich, huh? The whole book is very rich. You can open anywhere and find substance. So I'm just reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written, within the Gauriya Sampradaya, an abundant crop of evils has sprung up during the last 400 years. The first and foremost duty of an acharya is to completely uproot those evils. Some person imbued with the power of God will again establish true Varnashram Dharma in accordance with the divine dispensation. Is just one footnote on this page. For an in-depth analysis of how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati fulfilled Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Manobhishta, his heart's desire, see Sri Bhaktivinoda Manobhishta, O Srila Prabhupada. It's an article from the Gauriya. This all has to be brought out. Who will read it? Everyone's busy going to mantra rock dances. Who will read all these? Who will appreciate all these things? Someone. If someone appreciates. If one person even appreciates, then the task is fulfilled. So you have a lot of wealth in your Tamil language also?
Last year, this is what happened. It's so rich. I gave lecture last year. The same day. They brought all.
Actually, I was here on the 1st of January, but the disappearance there about censors would have fallen on a different date. So last year and this year, I was in Delhi at the end of the Christian year, and then I went from here to Vilupuram and then took a train to Rameshwaram. No, even one page, any work, you take Bhagavatam, Gita, anything, you can spend your whole life. It's like a big mine. You go on digging, you won't come to the end. So I was speaking about the Tamil Vaishnava literature. I don't understand Tamil, but I can understand. It's a very, very rich, very rich.
And my desire is that Prabandham, that can be explained by our devotees better than
them. I think so, yeah. Yeah. And so many writings they have. In Sanskrit also, there's great acharyas here, Vedanta Deshika, he made that. What is that? He made 1,000 prayers about the Lord's padukas. So many things. One function of our ISKCON, especially in Tamil, I mean, all over the world, but if not here, then where, is to glorify Sri Ramanujacharya and his sampradaya. We should also do that. Such people have walked this earth. This area here. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here. Hare Krishna. So we'll meet again at 12 o'clock, is it? And we'll have Pushpanjali and Guru Puja and Prasad. Krishna willing. It's a new year, according to the Western calendar. In India, they are also, so here also, so fireworks going off all around here. Even in the village. There are so many New Years, and Tamil New Year is just coming up in a few days. By the mercy of Karuna Nidhi, right? Otherwise, he changed the date. What was the purpose of that? Just his own idea. So he made the...
It's the beginning of Uttarayan.
Yeah.
Tamil New Year comes on May.
We have so many New Years. If you travel in India, there's all different New Years at different times. Gujarat, the New Years at the end of the cycle of. I mean, it's when the winter is beginning, is it not? Yeah. So it's like just when the winter is beginning. They have Uttarayanam also, isn't it? Is their new year. Then in Bengal it's Pahila Boishak, which means it's already hot. Already the heating up is well underway. Then in Kerala it's Onam, right? When does that come? Any idea? They all celebrate the Bali Maharaj Leela at that time. In August, September. It's a strange time. I mean, you would think that the new year would be in the spring, actually. Vasanta. That's when all the crops begin, new crops come up, then the days start to get longer and hotter. Anyway, people have their own ideas. It's like in they do like that. In the Western system, the day begins in the middle of the night, and the year begins in the middle of winter. They're like they like. And we're supposed to accept this as a superior civilization. All right, Hare Krishna, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, who gave us all these acharyas, Ki Jai.